Dialogue is key for a successful community. Get involved. This is Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips.
14 minutes past 8 o'clock here on Metro Talk. I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call. Right now, let's get to the wonderful First Sunday Roundtable Debate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
The politicians are in-house. Good morning to you. And on telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System. We also have Klaus Murray, who is a journalist with the Hill newspaper. He's on the line this morning. Good morning, Klaus.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Fine. Thank you very much for being with us. Let me introduce the panel as we normally do. Nicholas Solwalk.
Good morning, Jerry.
And?
Libertarian.
Thank you very much. You forgot your party or something? You know.
I seem to remember.
Moving ahead, we have also a Republican in the House. He is?
Jim Parmalee.
And we have Emily Loeffler, who is?
Independent.
And Patrice McKinney?
Democrat.
And finally, not last, not least, but also equal, Eric Mickelson, Green Party.
Thank you, Jerry.
Turning you to Nicholas, let me ask you very quickly. Bush has been raising lots of money compared to what the Democrats are doing. He seems to be out front. Yesterday he was in Mississippi, he went over to Kentucky and raising more monies for those governors, but also putting some merit on his own trail running for the president. What does it look like?
Well, it's always easier to raise money as a sitting president, and I think that, you know, we should be a little bit concerned that he's running around grabbing money this early in the game, but what do you expect?
Eric Mickelson, let me ask you from the Green Party. The gross national product last week showing an economic recovery. There are those in the economic stages saying it's going to be glorious for the president's reelection because the economy has turned around. Would you agree?
Well, you know, I think the one thing is certainly I'd like to see several quarters of improvement. And the other thing is, you know, the idea of the jobless recovery is still a problem for the president, I think. You know, we've lost, what, 3 million jobs since he's taken office? And we even lost more jobs this quarter, so it's going to still be a problem.
Emily Loeffler, independent. What about Clinton? Hillary, that is. According to one of the newspapers this past week, headlines show that some Democrats, GOP, and skeptics are beginning to turn around and look at this lady as a threat.
Well, she still stood by her promise to live out her term in the Senate, but there are rumors that she could be a viable VP to Clark as a winner. So we'll see. We'll see what kind of platform she comes out on, if she comes out at all.
Let me ask Patrice McKinney, Democrat. Howard Dean, Clark, those are the names that seem to be out front in the Democrats. What's happening in the Democratic House?
Well, Howard Dean is head of the pack. He's number one in the polls in Iowa, number one in the polls in New Hampshire. He's raised more money, three times as much money as any of the Democrats. It looks like he's the one for the nomination.
Jim Parmalee, this morning, two Americans, along with 20 others, shot down in a helicopter, two Americans killed. This puts the number up as far as how many people have been killed in Iraq since the end of the war, quote-unquote, end of the war victory. There are those in the Republican parties now are saying there is no end to the war. It's a continuation. Can't the Republicans make up their mind as to whether the war is on or over?
Well, there is a war and there are battles. Various battles can be over. But the war on terrorism started on September 11th, and it will continue until terrorism is over, regardless of what they do, where they attack, how much money they have. We're coming to get them, and we're going to finish the job, period.
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980. Pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Let's get to the issues. Klaus, I'm going to ask you from the Hill newspaper, Hill journalist, the article you wrote, which was a very interesting article, having to do how much money is raised in this campaign?
Well, there's actually going to be a lot of money raised, and right now I think it's unprecedented how much money is raised on both sides. Dean just had the best quarter of any Democrat and ever, and Bush outraised him 3-1, so he raised almost $50 million last quarter, and there's really no sign that either one of them are slowing down, and they just do it in different ways. Bush is able to get most of his money from people who give them maximum $2,000 that's now allowed for an individual, while Dean is getting his money in small donations, 50% of that on the Internet by people who give repeatedly, And so it's totally two different ways, but they're both breaking records.
Klaus, is Dean out ahead of the other Democrats? What, are there nine running?
Yeah,
he's far ahead of all the other Democrats.
As far as money is concerned?
Yes.
Right. What does this mean in comparison to Bush? If you have more money, you have many more commercials, you'll be able to buy radio, television, newspapers, but more importantly, you can have larger campaign staffs, do a dragnet of gathering votes around the country. Is that what Dean is going to have to face against Bush?
Well, first of all, we're talking about the primary, so both will be able to take in more money if Dean wins the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the people who've given their money to other Democrats in the field, for example, folks that have given $2,000 to Edwards, they will then want to support Dean. So he can kind of hope that once he wins the nomination, that there will be those larger donations coming in for him. And he is building his network from the bottom up. So he has 500,000 people almost that have said they want to help his campaign, and so he's building a grassroots effort that way. And that's what he will have to do because he's not going to have as much money. On the other hand, a lot of people I talk to, they feel eventually there is going to be a point of diminished return. So, for example, that it may not matter between Bush raising $200 or $300 million because there's only so many ads you can buy.
Okay,
Well, regardless of what the president thinks, I think what it comes down to is spending is not a solution to everything. And if he can't dig himself out of the hole that he's in with unemployment and casualties in Iraq and White House leaks, then, no amount of money, no matter how much money he is able to have spread around in his campaign, a grassroots support for a Democratic nominee is going to be much more important.
Jerry, I'd like to rephrase the question. Is it a question of how much money has been given or how many people are giving money? And Howard Dean is certainly, George Bush's $60 million translates into $30,000, $2,000 givers as opposed to Howard Dean's $500,000, $89 givers.
Wait, let me correct something, though, that the Republican National Committee and Republican candidates in general tend to have smaller average donors than do the Democrats. The Democrats have been for years the king of the big donors, and campaign finance reform has changed some of that. The Democrats seem to have cut off their nose to spite their face.
The other thing that might be interesting is at this point in the game, Bush is getting special interest contributions and contributions from people who want the system to stay the way it is and want the same regime in Washington. And Dean's only getting...
What about
right, some big business. And I think that what's going to happen is after we get past the primaries, you're going to see that Dean or whoever gets the nomination is going to pull way out in front because then large special interests and big business will start giving to Dean because he's actually, one step away from the White House. At the primaries, the only people you're going to get are the vast majority of the American people who are a little bit unhappy with the current administration, but you're not going to get those big heavy hitters because they won't come out for a challenger until they're sure that challenger is going to make it into the race.
From the Libertarian to the Green Party.
I think that, I think this raises a whole bunch of issues. And, I know Clinton raised money while he was in office, but Bush is, spending taxpayer time flying around the country to go to $2,000 a plate dinners to raise money for his reelection campaign while, there's soldiers dying in Iraq. The economy, at least until very recently, has been really in the doldrums. Unemployment rates are rising. And it seems to me, maybe this is sort of part of business as usual, but it's really distasteful to see a sitting president putting so much emphasis on his reelection as well as the reelection of other folks in his party while he's on our dime.
But hold on, the election happens next year whether he campaigns or not, and I think I hate to use Clinton as an example, but Clinton did the same thing. I hate to even mention the name, but but I'll tell you, they're all campaigning. But Howard Dean has not suspended his campaigning because of the war.
He doesn't have another job to do.
There's a good example as maybe why we shouldn't elect him.
But how long has it been, really, since we've had politicians that have actually been most concerned with legislating or running the country's business as opposed to getting reelected?
Well,
I don't think politicians, not in this century.
Well, one thing, donations or not, there's going to be a lot of aligning here, because in your article, Klaus, you mentioned the fact that Dean received donations from movie stars, such as celebrities like Helen Hunt, Robin Williams, James Belushi. You named a whole lot of stars here giving pretty good, hefty donations. We're going to find that this is going to be much of a story financially in the not only the primaries, but the future presidential election, that you're going to find Hollywood and places like Hollywood opposed to, say, large corporations giving?
Well, I'm not sure that that's going to be the future, but I think what makes those donations interesting is that obviously those are people, anybody can recognize their names, and they put their names on a letter, even if they don't have anything to do with politics. For example, Helen Hunt, that people will then say, oh, whoa, Helen Hunt is, likes Dean, so I'm going to give him some money too. And so that, I think, makes these movie star endorsements may turn out to be lucrative for Dean in the long run.
Okay. Klaus, I want to thank you very much for taking time out and joining us. Come join us again, will you, please?
I sure will.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Journalist Klaus Murray, who is with the Hill newspaper, he writes pretty much the political stories on the Hill, for the Hill newspaper, and he's written an interesting story about the funds and monies that are being collected by the candidates. All right, panelists, let's continue on. Let's talk about the gross national product. It's showing an economic recovery, but the polls show a political decline in popularity towards the Bush administration because of Iraqi recovery, domestic cuts, White House scandal leaks, and poor foreign relations. Can he rebound all of this in year 2004?
Well, sure. I mean,
his
popularity ratings are higher than they were for a number of recent presidents who were reelected handily. So, certainly President Bush is going to have a year to campaign, as are the Democrats, and we're going to put the issues out there, have some debates. In the end, I believe President Bush is going to win because people are going to want to
within
to
that
strong
year,
leadership.
Within that year will we see an escalation of what you call ground activity. They're calling it war in Iraq.
Well, I'm not calling it ground
activity. Wars win seats.
I'm calling it a battle against terrorism and a battle against the people who want to get us. And I think that any Democratic candidate that comes out and says we want to let Saddam Hussein come back is irresponsible and should step out of the race.
I haven't heard any Democrats say that, right?
They say they don't want us to go get him.
I haven't heard anybody say that they want Saddam Hussein to come back. In fact, what we're trying to do is wage a war on terrorism, and we just don't have any evidence that Saddam Hussein was connected with the al-Qaeda catastrophe that we experienced here in the United States. And in fact, our actions in Iraq have made the world a more dangerous place because we've created an environment where terrorism can flourish in Iraq and throughout the Middle East.
Let me ask you, my dear friend Nicholas, polls show that Americans do like Bush, but on the other hand, they're not too happy with what's happening in Iraq.
Yeah, I think it's kind of people feel comfortable with Bush for some reason, and yet people don't seem to feel comfortable with any of his policies to speak of. His domestic policies have really caused some problems, especially stuff, and the foreign relations, it's just a mess. Between the war, between the steel tariffs, I mean, this is a president who sold us a bill of goods. When he ran, he said we're not going to do nation building. When he ran, he said we're not going to engage in protectionist trade practices. When he ran, he said, we're not going to, you know, keep increasing spending. He spent more money than any previous sitting president, a larger budget increase. He has gone to numerous foreign entanglements and gotten us all embroiled around the world in fights. This war on terrorism doesn't find any terrorists. And we're creating protectionist trade policies that are costing, you know, all Americans more money for their cars just so that a couple of steel workers in some swing states will vote for the president. And I think it's ludicrous.
Well, and I'm all with Nick for spending less money. But let me point out, he mentioned that we haven't gotten any terrorists. We've been rounding up terrorists by the dozens for about a year now or longer. So, I mean, we're getting them. Every day our troops are out there. They're arresting people. They're rounding up terrorists. They're breaking up cells in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world. So we're winning this war. It's just a matter of, you know, how many terrorists want to get arrested.
Are you saying Afghanistan's a success?
You know what? It is a heck of a lot of more of a success than when it was being run by the Taliban and they were orchestrating planes flying into buildings.
You mean our 1 square mile of Kabul that we control in the entire country?
You know what? They don't control it. If we take it away from them, it's a fumble for them. And I'll tell you what, I guarantee you, I don't think, I mean, nobody in the country should doubt that it is better for us to have liberated Afghanistan than to continue to allow the terrorists to run it.
The time is 8:30 here in Washington. This is Metro Talk from Clear Channel Radio, a community service of Clear Channel, our public affairs of WBIG and WTM. And our telephone number is 301-230-0980, pound 980, and Verizon Wireless System. Our lines open. I'd like to hear from you about how you feel about some of the issues we're discussing. We happen to be moving on to another issue, and you want to discuss the previous issue, that's fine with us because the panel is a little confused anyway, and they always like to go back on things. Anyway, our telephone number is 301-230-0980, pound 980 of Verizon, along with Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Independent Emily Leffler, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Green Party Eric Mickelson. We are discussing the issues of the month on our first political debate. Emily.
Well, the kind of double talk that Jim is performing here totally exemplifies what we're seeing from the Republicans, from the president, and from a Republican majority Congress. And we're getting close to 36 attacks a day in Iraq, which is about triple what it was 6 months ago. As Nick pointed out, Afghanistan is now a disaster being run by warlords. And the president has pretty much proven to be not a strong leader, but a master of deception. As Americans wake up to that fact, there's going to be more and more call for change in the next election.
In addition to what's going on overseas in Afghanistan and Iraq, we also have the administration rounding up alleged terrorists and throwing them into Guantanamo Bay, keeping them out of the reach of law. And, you know, this is another example of an administration policy gone amok.
Would you like to let them go?
Well, before we let them go, let me ask my dear friend over here, Eric. Eric, there is one thing coming out of this week's recovery, as I talked about the gross national product. And the commentators in the media said before the White House said anything, the White House will put a spin on this and take claim and credit. And then, of course, we heard this actually happening. The fact that, yes, we've been working on the economy, and the one thing that's really working in this country are the tax cuts. Would
right.
you agree?
Well, you know, it seems awfully presumptuous to me. You know, again, like you say, they hadn't taken credit for the down quarters that had occurred previously. And, you know, I just feel like the issue with the tax cuts, with the fact that jobs have not been recovered, the fact that health care costs are spiraling out of control in the country, and that seems to be preventing a lot of employers from hiring on new employees as well.
The economy, the president does not control the economy. The best a president can do is stay out of the way and let the economy grow, and the worst he can do is totally screw it up. But the idea that somehow the administration is directly related to what happens in the economy is completely ludicrous. It's ludicrous if you're trying to blame the president for, you know, a horrible, horrible double-dip recession, and it's ludicrous if you're trying to, you know, get the credit for an incredible 7.2% increase in GDP. It's stupid both ways. The economy is not controlled by the president. The economy is rebounding because the American people are finding, you know, reserves of productivity. We're working harder to get out of this, and I just wish that our representatives in Congress would pay attention to that and start, you know, maybe tightening their belt a little bit.
Okay, a line's open. Like to hear from you folks. We like to stand around the water coolers at work and lay out the administration, or there are those who support the administration. Now you can express yourself on our forum right here on First Sunday Debate. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call. I got lines open. We're talking about politics, naturally, but the fact is that they affect us. We're talking about the monies that's been raised by the president for reelection, as well as helping the governors, and the gross national product showing an economic recovery. But the polls show a decline in popularity for the White House. Can there be a rebound for year 2002? 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. Nicholas Sawalk, your friend is on the line. Here's Pat.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, Nicholas. How are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. On this economy business, and we're talking about the economy turning and about the Bush administration claiming that there's more jobs, I wish somebody would bring up the point that the majority of the job increases come in temporary labor, people who are in part-time positions where they're not having benefits or health care, and that what we're hearing, again, as Nicholas put it, is double talk. If the economy is improving, I don't think Bush has anything to do with it. I'm still wondering how come he didn't read his father's book where his father said he would not go after Saddam Hussein because he was afraid of guerrilla activity. And as far as the foreign policy of this country bringing up Afghanistan and warlords, Afghanistan has been like that for years. We go in and do a foreign policy based on our own judgments and values and not on the culture and of the ethos of the people that we're going against. And frankly, I really hope some Democrat goes and kicks them out.
Okay.
I'll have a good day.
No, Pat, don't leave. No, Pat, can't leave on that note, Pat. Hold
on. Question for
just
Pat.
A second, sir. Pat, hold on the line, okay?
Yes, dear.
Pat's in Alexandria. Let's go to Annapolis and get Frank on the line. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. You heard what Pat said in the panel?
Yeah, well, I'm not quite as radical as she is, but I have to tend to agree with her.
Oh, I'm just slightly to the left of Attila the Hun.
The only thing that I wanted to say was that it's amazing to me. I'm a small business owner. And it's amazing to me how many people believe, like one of your panelists said, that the government is how the economy is created or kept running. And if more people would look at it like your panelists had said, and the people are the ones who run the economy, and quite frankly, if the government would run the government like most people run businesses, we'd all be doing a lot better off.
Okay.
Yeah, there'd be a lot less employees for the government and a lot less in Congress voting themselves pay increases. Well, it just, you know, if Mr. Bush wants to go out and raise that amount of money to be reelected, I'd rather that he go out and raise that amount of money to replace the $87 billion he's taking away from the American economy to give to Iraq.
Hear, hear.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. Thank you very much, Frank.
Nicholas. Thank you.
Stay there.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, a Libertarian, and then we'll come back to the Republican.
I'm all for him to start doing bake sales and stuff, you know. I mean, it's frankly disrespectful and insulting to the American people who are currently dealing with a recession and trying to tighten our belts and trying to get through this for the Congress and the President to engage in this debauched orgy of spending on anything and everything and making everything, you know, oh, it's for Homeland Security. And spending, you know, more and more and more of our tax dollars while we're all just trying to get by.
301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Spending on Homeland Security. A big failure this week on Capitol Hill. Big loophole. In fact, the Washington Post is reporting, as I read in the news this morning, that they have talked with Police Chief Terrence Gaynor of Capitol Hill, and he says, hey, we're at fault. We don't communicate. In so many words, he says that there were communication failures and serious security gaps. They have to take a better look at the way they do security. Well, this has been 2 years. They've been doing that for a long time. Money's dumped into, an example of what Nicholas is saying, into the Capitol Police, a lot of money dumped into the Capitol Police for security. And someone walked through with a Halloween costume and a toy gun. What about that, Jim Pomeli?
I think it's clear that no matter how much money you spend, something's going to slide through. The question is, if 100 things are going to slide through security, would you rather knock down 50 of them or knock down 95 of them? The Capitol Police...
takes one.
I know, and you can never make it perfect. I mean, the Capitol Police are doing a fine job, our law enforcement is doing a fine job, but they are not ever going to be 100%. We can always strive for that, but yeah, we certainly don't want to, you know, take the money away and say forget it.
Wait.
It's never going to be 100%, does that mean that the war on terrorism is never going to be over, Jim?
Absolutely, it has never. And in fact, the war on terrorism, I don't know if you guys have been noticing, but there have been terrorists for decades. We took a decade off with Bill Clinton in fighting terrorism, and now the adults are back in charge.
I think the word that you're looking for is there have been terrorists for centuries. There will always
millennia.
Be terrorists.
I'll go with millennia.
Are you going with the Orwell strategy?
No,
war is
perpetual
peace.
War. Excuse me, folks.
Perpetual terrorism.
Excuse me, folks. No one talks about Oklahoma, terrorists, American style. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Let's talk with Ed in Alexandria. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, I just was driving down and happened to catch your program here. I just got a comment for what the guy said about the president has nothing to do with what the economy, how the economy is so bad and all.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't have anything to do with it, then who is? I mean, I couldn't agree more with what the lady said. We can't wait. I used to be a Republican up until the Bushes, you know, became presidents. And they've proven time and time again that they cannot run this country the way a Democrat can.
But what is it you dislike, Ed, specifically?
Well, you know, let me put it this way. When Bill Clinton came in power, my wife and I did not own a house then. We were like many, I guess, millions of Americans renting, okay? And when Bill Clinton came in power, you know, everything went up for us. I started making more money. My wife got a good job making money because there were jobs available. Last year, we took a hit between my wife and I, $35,000 less in combined income because of our jobs being so bad.
And so basically, you're saying that there's a difference between the two administrations.
Oh, yeah.
Economically.
You have to admit it.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call, Ed. I'll turn to you, Jim Pomeli. You want to answer that?
Well, I'm glad that he has been able to buy a home, and if he lives in Virginia, his local property taxes have been skyrocketing thanks to the local control of Democrats, so I would urge you to vote for Michelle.
They were skyrocketing before the local control of Democrats, Jim.
No. It's been record-setting property tax increases in Virginia over the last 4 days.
But they just corrected that about a month ago.
No. A 53% increase in the last 4 years.
Wait a second.
That was corrected. What about the car tax in Virginia? Remember coming out of the halls of Republicans?
We're cutting that.
Yeah. Democrats cut that, Jim.
No. Car tax in Virginia. No. The Republicans cut it, and the Democrats are reinstituting it.
Come on, Jim. What was his name? Governor what?
Governor Gilmore cut the car tax, and Governor Warner wants to reinstitute.
That was his platform.
Nick, to answer the panelist or the caller's question, it's people like him that drive this economy, and it's small business owners like the previous caller, Frank. I'm not going to pick someone in the Fairfax race, but how nice is it to keep raising people's property taxes by obscene amounts when you know you're taking a $35,000 cut in pay? How can the government justify taking more of our money when we're doing worse and worse?
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, and Verizon Wireless System, absolutely free call on Verizon. Lines open as we talk politics here on our first Sunday political debate, along with Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Eric Mickelson, Green Party, Emily Leffler, Independent, Republican Jim Pomeli, and Libertarian Nicholas Sawa. Eric.
Again, like Nicholas said, I'm not going to take a position on the Fairfax race, but the people of Fairfax County are used to high standards. They demand high levels of public services, good public schools, good libraries, you know, other services, and they expect to pay for that. If they don't want to pay for that and they want those services to decline, then that's their choice as well.
But also, if you look at the bigger picture and you look at the circle of the economy, what we have happening in Fairfax County is not an effective increase in tax rate. We have assessments going up. Our housing assessments are going up. We have a low interest rate thanks to the Federal Reserve, and that we have people able to refinance their homes, pull the capital out of their homes based on these high assessments, and that is what helped to stimulate the economy.
Let me ask one question. We talked with Michelle Brickner, Republican running against Connolly in Fairfax County. She says her plan is to have a cap ceiling over tax raises. That is 5%, no more than 5%, to cover transportation, education, you know, and all. Is that a good idea?
Is that a tax cap on assessments or on tax rates?
She said tax increase.
Tax bills.
Right.
Well,
our bill will go
good idea.
You know,
let's talk about our school spending and our mandated programs by the federal government. How are we going to pay for those?
Okay.
Let's talk about how sustainable that is. I know that this recovery is being supported on the backs of home equity loans, but we are engaging in increases in government spending at obscene levels and have been for 6-7 years, and it's not sustainable. Somebody has to pay the bills 10 years from now, and when we're spending well beyond our means, and there's no more equity you can get out of your home because the housing market softens, are you going to be the one to, you know, go firing people?
Let's go to Kate in Falls Church. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. I want to bring up a couple of things about the president. First of all, people were talking about the $87 billion that was donated to Iraq. What about the $50 billion that they started out? So that's like 130 $7 billion to Iraq. And also, no one's saying anything about the weapons of mass destruction, that that's what really led us into war. No one. I mean, you don't even mention the words anymore.
Kate, hold your point. Let's go to Marcel in Maryland and see if he mentions the word. Marcel, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Fine. Kate's on the line with you. She says the things we talked about to get us to Iraq, they're not talking about it anymore, like mass destruction weapons.
Oh, definitely they're not talking about it. And actually, I'm not sure, Kate. I think that initial number may have been $70 billion for the initial, for the first go-round and then $87 on the second go-round. My biggest point that I heard, at least that I just thought of when I heard you guys talking earlier, was the war on terrorism. And I define terrorism as being a concept, because anyone can be a terrorist, anyone else, depending on how you apply that definition. So that's a never-ending war, because you're fighting a concept. You're not fighting a group of people.
Look, terrorism is when you fly planes into buildings. Terrorism is when you kill innocent civilians. Terrorism is pretty darn clear. War is different. You have soldiers in uniforms fighting over certain borders and things. That's one thing. But when you're attacking civilians, that, my friend, is terrorism.
Yeah, and Kate, do you think you can win that war, Jim?
Excuse me, Kate.
Absolutely.
Kate and Marcel, let me ask you the question, since Jim has given us the definition of terrorism. Conflict around the world, terrorism or not, it's still mounting up against the United States. How do you feel about that?
My feelings on that, or personally, is that I kind of go back to the, I rationalize things down to like this, the high school bully, where this guy's going around, he's bullying a bunch of people, and once you bully too many people, what happens? All those people get together and they come and they kick your butt. So we need to be careful where we're going. And being former military, I feel real bad for these guys out here that are putting their lives on the line, and these families that are losing members on a daily basis based on us not having enough troops to support our quote-unquote war.
Thank you very much, Marcel. Kate, let me ask you the question. The Ugly American came out in, what, the 1940s, after World War II, the book itself and the whole concept. And now it's kind of resurging or emerging again, and that is the fact that people are saying we are ugly Americans based on what Marcel just said, the bully in the bullpen. What about that, Kate? Do you agree?
Well, yes, I do. And I think one of the things that the Republicans lost after the tragedy of 9/11 was that the whole world was with us, and they were willing to help us fight terrorism. And Mr. Bush spent that whole thing, and so most of the world is sort of like against us. And why do we have to have somebody in the White House who doesn't know how to, you know, treat other people? And that's really what he's doing.
Marcel, Kate, thank you very much for your call. Jim?
Look, the recent polls show that a third of Germans have the psychotic belief that that America staged the 9/11 attacks in order to invade Iraq. Now, if you have that sort of irresponsible reporting around the world, quite frankly, we shouldn't care about the opinion of the 30% that think we orchestrated.
But they don't have a right to their opinion, Jim?
Well, they have a right to their opinion. We have a right to ignore it and go get the terrorists and protect
we?
Our country.
But who's we?
The United States of America.
Jerry, even if they disagree.
Jerry, if Jim's so worried about the opinions of Germans, I wonder if he's worried about the Fox News-fed Americans, 70% of whom believed that Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda were somehow connected.
I'll tell you right now, they certainly are allies on the same team.
No, Jim, it's misinformation.
No, it's absolutely
not just connected.
Allies on the same team.
Excuse me, gents. Thank you very much. I love your singing together. Let's go to Sterling, Virginia on the cell phone, and let's talk to Jeff. Good morning, Jeff. I'm sorry, Stu in Silver Spring. Good morning, Stu.
Hey, Jerry. Good morning. Good morning to the panel. I want to go back to the economy for just a moment.
Quickly.
There are always cycles. There's boom, and then there's bust. Whoever's in the administration is going to get credit for the boom. Whoever is there when there's the bust is going to get the blame. It has nothing to do with them. They can influence it a certain amount. The tax cuts that have been done, all the other things that the Treasury has done, that's why we had the 7.2% interest. Someone during the week said, if the headlines say 30,000 troops left and they're coming out and jobs are increasing, Bush will win. If it says jobs are still where they were or going down and we have 100,000 troops still there, he's going to lose. Bottom line.
That was the point we made earlier. Thank you very much, Stu. Appreciate your input. In Rockville, John standing by. Good morning, John.
Good morning. It's just two quick things. Just a little anecdote or a saying. When Clinton lied, no one died. Number one, And number two, this has been, I'm associated with the administration at some level, and I won't say exactly where, but this administration is just absolutely atrocious. The Kellogg-Brown and Root relationship, the Cheney relationship, the Lynn-Cheney relationship, the Bush-Senior relationship is, when it all comes out, it's going to be laughable. So I just wanted to make that brief comment. Thank you.
John, hold on the line. Don't leave
okay.
me, okay?
Let's get
Matt. Let's leave Rockville, go south to Reston. Matt's on the line. Good morning, Matt. John has made a statement that it's getting bad. What do you say?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I enjoyed listening to it on my brief ride this morning.
Thank you.
I just have a brief comment. I am so sick and tired of people just bashing the president, no matter who is in office, because they're Democrat or Republican. I wish they could all just sit back and point out one or two things that the president has done good instead of this continual bashing of each other. I am so sick of it.
Can you give us an example, caller, of one of the good things president's done?
Well, just for example, for Clinton, you know, when he was messing around with Monica, the Democrats embraced him, if you will, where all the Republicans bashed him. The president, you know, sending all these troops over to Iraq, much bigger scale than what Clinton did, but all the Democrats are bashing him for this.
What?
I personally am glad he went over to Iraq. Did things work out the way everybody wanted to? No, but those things happen in war. The point is, we stay there, we build the new system up, let the Iraqis run it, and get out.
Thank you very much, John.
I'm kind of curious.
Quickly.
I'd like the caller to tell us what his favorite thing the president has done is.
Okay, let's go to Upper Marlboro. Jason's on the line. Good morning, Jason.
Hi, I think I'm just about as fed up as that last guy. but mostly about, like, you know, to call America a bully is just ignorance. A bully picks on people who can't defend themselves. We are over there defending people who can't defend themselves. We're not the bully. We're taking care of the people who are being bullied.
Well, then why did we attack Iraq instead of North Korea?
Hey, I'm ready to go after them, too.
God bless you, sir. Thank you very much, Jason. Folks, let's move on. Interesting opinions here. That's what the first Sunday roundtable debate is all about, to get everybody's opinions in. We can all communicate whether we agree or disagree. You like that line? Don't steal it, Jim. Anyway, moving ahead.
Let me write that down.
Moving here. Fairfax County elections coming up Tuesday. Please get out and vote, ladies and gentlemen. We had one candidate this morning talking to us, Michelle Brickner, Republican, and they did a nice spread on her last week, along with Mr. Connolly of Fairfax County, both of them running for the seat of Kate Hanley, who was dynamite, regardless what you say. Yes, she was, Jim. Everybody liked Kate Hanley.
Not everyone lied about Kate Hanley.
How can you dislike the little old lady in the candy store?
You just called Kate Hanley a little old lady in the candy store?
I'm going to agree.
Should I agree with you?
She's going to call me after the show.
Kate, run to your phone.
She's a nice lady in the candy. And I say candy store meaning that she opened the doors of Fairfax County to help a lot of people. I mean, like a lot of people like
her. She raised our property taxes 53% after promising she wouldn't.
Well, she's helping them with your money.
Candy store is the money that she's grabbing hand over fist and tossing in the air as she rolls around in.
I love Republicans. They don't even want to pay for the roads. Now, let me ask you this question, my dear friend.
We gave it the office.
All right. Quiet. Fairfax County elections on Tuesday. Both candidates really look good. It's neck and neck, they say. And that is the candidacy of Michelle Brickner, Republican, and Democrat Gerald Connolly. Let me ask you, my friend, Eric, Green Party, which of the two will come out first?
You know, Jerry, I'm not that familiar with Fairfax politics, but again, like I said earlier, if the people of Fairfax County want high-level services, they need to expect to pay for them.
Let me ask my dear friend Patrice, the Democrat.
Jerry Connolly's got it.
Emily, the Independent.
It's going to depend who has a job that day.
What?
On the voters.
Okay. Nicholas.
It really comes down to whether or not the people of Fairfax County think they want to continue paying larger and larger pieces of their income in taxes.
Okay, and Jim Bomley?
Look, if you're happy with the monstrously high taxes in Fairfax County and you're happy with Jerry Connolly's hundreds of hidden donations from developers in exchange for political favors and the fact that business interests before the board hired Jerry Connolly, if you're comfortable with that level of corruption and that level of government spending, hey, sure, vote for Jerry Connolly. But if you want honest, efficient government and you want a cap on your property taxes, vote for Michelle Brickner.
I hope the day comes when we get campaign reform, because this thing, that group, and this, never mind. Anyway, moving ahead, guys, we have about 6 minutes. Am I right, Steve? With that, let's take a look at one question. Will Hillary be drafted from the floor at the Democratic National Convention? Yes or no?
No.
Libertarian says no. Republican?
No.
Independent?
Depends on what's going on with Clark and Dean.
Democrat?
Nope. Dean's got it wrapped up.
And Eric?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, Hillary, pack your bags, come back in year 2008 or something, you know, forget
about
it.
We've spoken.
But we love you, though, Hillary. We love you still. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to take a few minutes here to talk about a man that I worked for and I worked with over the years. And as a native Washingtonian, fourth generation, we thought in his day he was Washington, D.C., and I'm speaking about the late Walter Washington. The time that we spend talking about this man and what he contributed to this city is not even enough. Certainly, he was a statesman. He was very, very much loved. I have a letter in my office from Walter Washington in 1978 who wrote me a letter saying he could not attend a roast that the city was giving me for Project Harvest. And he went on to say how much he liked the media. Everybody in the media respected him. I'm talking about the Bruce Johnsons over at 9 and Tom Sherwood over at 4. My goodness, Aisha Karima, Angie Owens. I don't want to start naming everybody. Adrian Washington, Leon Dash. Just a whole press corps of local politics back then, which was an infant, loved this man. And he, because he was so cool. He could remember Sam Jordan and the roving leaders. We didn't have gangs like we have now, because back then under Walter Washington, people knew what was going on in the community. You see, there was no question about a guy getting a shot on the street and everybody's running around like the police chief wondering, well, gee, we have gangs. Yes, Mr. Ramsey, we have gangs. But it ain't a Ramsey, whatever your name is. Anyway, the point is that back then, community and local government worked so close hand in hand because of this great man. So I'm going to open it up to the panel. I've said what I've said. Yes, I'm very prejudiced about Walter Washington because he made a lot of people happy and recognized in this town. Appointed by Lyndon Baines Johnson twice. And under the reigns of Richard Nixon, that's when he was elected. Eric Nicholson.
You know, I think in the spirit of this man who was able to get home rule for D.C., isn't it time that D.C. got voting representation in Congress, that D.C. began to get the representation in the legislature that it deserves and that it takes the next step as far as being, you know, a fully recognized part of this country?
Nick Lasowak.
I think that Walter Washington was incredible in being able to make the transition from an appointed leader to an elected leader and be able to do it with honor and without, you know, going hat in hand to Congress, and yet still... He was able to stand up for the city while still being able to work with Congress. And I think the sad part and the reason that D.C. is probably no closer to that representation in Congress is that the Barry years pretty much pissed it all away.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
They
made
Congress distrust them.
I'm open to your
Congress
opinion.
Distrusts the city because of that.
Yeah, because Barry made a great contribution to the city, too. He brought it from Walter Washington's southern sleepy town days to a recognized city. Now, what we can say about
it's recognized for is...
Yeah, but the latter years of Barry, in all fairness, I'm going to take in which we're very concerned in the community about Marion Barry because they're saying that, you know, he doesn't really look good. And I wouldn't bash the man for the years that he gave to Washington. The latter years, we could say a lot about.
Right, those are the ones I'm most familiar with.
But there was a great transition in those men. Emily.
Well, Walter Washington was an inspiration for those fighting for home rule today in D.C. and those fighting for civil rights still across the country.
And Jim?
Well, I'll say Marion Barry may be a good man personally. I've met him a few times, and he's very personable. But the seeds, when they replaced,
right.
when they replaced Walter Washington with him, the seeds for the destruction of the D.C. government were set because the spending got out of control. The government ended up hiring everybody. And what that the reason that you have the problems in D.C. that you have now is the ridiculous orgy of spending that happened after
Very
Walter
quickly,
Washington.
Very quickly, got to go to Patrice. Patrice,
Jerry,
10 seconds.
Jerry, Walter Washington is really a national treasure. As the first African-American chief executive of a major American city, we owe him a great deal of thanks.
Thank you very much, guys. See you next month. Have a good one.
Thanks, Jerry.
Libertarian, Republican, Democrat, Green Party, and Independent. My God, my life is going to, you know what. Anyway. Don't forget Homeless next weekend. We'll talk about thanking those who helped to put it together this morning. Steve Solomon is our technical producer. Along with, we welcome our new administrative producer, Carolina Rostropo, as well as Quentin Jackson, public affairs assistant, written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a Clear Channel public affairs presentation. Till next time, get out and enjoy this gorgeous fall day. Much peace, much love.